Welcome to 48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories. I'm your host, Kirk Nordenstrom, co-producer of the Seattle and Montana 48 Hour Film Projects. And on today's episode, Chris Flink will be co-hosting with me. She is my co-producer for both events. And our guest today is a Seattle area filmmaker named Trina Griffin. And I really wanted Chris in on this interview, because when the three of us get together, I just really, really, really like the vibe that happens. It's full of laughter and seriousness without it being overly serious. But Trina is doing some amazing work with her organization Rising Reels, which gives opportunities to young BIPOC filmmakers who might not normally be able to afford an education in filmmaking. And she does it with such verve and gusto, and selflessness is, I guess, really the best way to put it. Trina is so giving and so upbeat and so positive and caring that I really, really, really want to use this platform to amplify her message and her voice. So please welcome Trina Griffin and Chris Flink.
So it really doesn't matter what you look like, say, or do. I know that I had a cooler weekend than you.
Hey, welcome everyone to 48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories. I have Chris Flink with me here today as my co-host.
Hello.
Our guest today is the fantastic Trina Griffin. And I just always like the vibe when the three of us are chatting. So welcome to the show, Trina.
Greetings and salutations. No, Charlotte.
It is.
So who are you, Trina? Why am I talking to you?
Oh, who am I? That's a deep question.
That is. How long do we have?
Yeah, I am a goddess. I didn't know I'd be on Earth this long. No, seriously. I'm the co-owner of Rising Reels. I actually like to put that in the front because I always leave it in the back and I forget to mention it.
Oh, we'll talk at length about that for sure.
That is my nonprofit organization where we're working with BIPOC children to teach them about filmmaking. I am a mother of four children. I always talk about that first. And a grandmother. Well, they're not children anymore. They're like adults. And a grandmother of 10. And with a newborn who was just born in January. And he is adorable. Just love him. But it reminds me why I don't have babies. So this is good. I just get to hold him. And think, okay, here you go. Back to mom.
So for the audience, a little context here is when Trina said 10 grandchildren, both Chris and I are shaking our heads like, no, that's just no way. There's no way you were old enough to have 10 grandchildren.
When people ask me, they're like, how old is your oldest? I'm like, 30. They're like, okay, wait, 30 something. Yeah, 36, 37. I have to do the math. Give me a chance.
And they were like, were you 5 years old when you had your children? I mean,
I was very young, very young.
Were they born simultaneously with you?
Like bullets.
I'm like, weird pregnancy turducken.
You know? No, it's really genetics. My mother, God rest her soul, and my dad too, they just didn't age like normal people age. They stayed looking very young, even till the day that they died. They looked really young. So it's
in your genes, baby.
Yeah, you hit the genetic jackpot.
Nice.
Thank you. I get to work with the community. I've done a lot of work with the community. I really believe in the community. I believe that people need to feel appreciated. And if I can be a part of that in any way, serving, doing medical care, providing nutritional information, I'm there.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, a big part of the reason Chris and I both wanted to talk to you is, so I've worked with you outside of the 48 on one or two projects, and I've seen you participate in the 48, and you're always this burst of energy on a set, very positive energy on a set, and you're very giving of yourself physically and emotionally in terms of helping people. And I really admire that. You know, I want to promote the hell out of it. I want people to know who you are and what you're doing.
People go through their whole life never knowing what their purpose is or their reason for why they're here. And they get stuck being responsible. Now, I'm not saying what I do is not responsible. But when my kids were old enough, I decided, okay, I'm done doing corporate. I want to do what makes me happy. And my whole life, I've loved being in film or working with film or telling a story, doing theatricals, whatever. I have loved it. It has been the place I go to kind of escape. And so it was like, why are you not doing it? Because it's not practical. I have kids. I got to feed them, this and that. And it was like one friend told me one day, she said, if you chase your dream, the money will follow. And that's just the way it follows. It's so true. The money follows. I haven't wanted for anything the moment I started chasing my dream. That might also add to why I look so young, because I do what makes me happy. And that's where energy comes from. That's where the joy comes from. When I am on set, I love being on set. That is my passion. I mean, I am just like, get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Okay. We're going to work this for 12 hours. Okay. We're like coming to the last bit of the day. Okay. What do you need done? I feel like I'm the first one there and the last one to leave because I'm so excited. Come back again tomorrow. You bet I'll be there. I just love it. I mean, it's like that, you know, being a person of color too, the opportunity to have that experience and to bring my culture, myself to the set so people can have that experience and see a different side of what, you know, how we're portrayed in films and stuff. I feel like I'm total opposite of what our portrayal of who we are or how we get.
How so?
Well, I feel like most of the time when people are telling our story, people of color story, it's very dark.
Mm-hmm.
We're very loud. Women, black women are bougie and they're either in hatred of each other or they have big, strong attitudes where they don't, instead of working together, they're tearing each other down or they're the silent person in the background with all of the deviant behavior thinking in their mind, you know, I'm going to get that person. And we like to use a bunch of curse words and everybody's the B word and, you know, nobody has common sense and can carry themselves professionally. And if they do, they're, no offense, quote unquote, whitewashed. Considered to be, oh, Uncle Tom's, you're just you're just playing a role like you're so superior and so smart, but you know, you're just down here one step from being down here with the rest of us. It's like, no, we are joyful people. We love hard, we have passion, we have things that we care about. We do raise our children with common sense. We do cry over our children and our family. We're not always singing spiritual hymns, though, you know. it's true. I sing a little.
I have never once seen you do that.
I have not either.
I will sing a little Beyonce. I mean,
all right, girl.
But there is a moment where, you know, it's just like, I don't like to be portrayed that way. And yet, like, I got these people telling my story and I'm thinking, that's not really my story. That's someone's see of how they think we are or a bad experience that they had with someone that, you know, that's how they were perceived in that moment. But a lot of us are not like that. A lot of us are hardworking. A lot of us are, you know, we're just as afraid as everybody else. We have our fears. We have our, you know, we have our concerns. We want to be productive as much as everybody else. We want the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you definitely shatter that stereotype because I don't find any of that from you. I find you to be a strong, sassy, independent, you know, woman and incredibly knowledgeable, not any of that other stuff. So, I mean, and I haven't even worked with you specifically on set, which we need to change, by the way, but that's enough for another day.
And you got to meet my kids. So, I mean, I feel like you're the product of who you are. And
she's
I mean,
beautiful, intelligent, wonderful young lady.
Delightful, yeah.
Yeah, I love her.
Well, let's hope so. She's your daughter.
Yeah, I mean, some people don't like their kids. I love her.
She has drive and ambition and goals and a desire to help other people, which is so heartening to see.
And being a mom yourself, you know, I keep telling her, pass that energy down to the children. Mm-hmm. Teach kids. Don't forget to show them how. Mm-hmm. Because the world needs more of that.
Yeah.
And a lot less of the, well, I'm going to get mine. If you didn't get yours, too bad. You know, that's enough of that in every culture.
Here, here. I agree on that.
That's one of my favorite things about running the Montana and Seattle 48s. Our primary goal is to help people and to give a platform and, you know, amplify their voice through filmmaking. And how did you come to be involved in the 48 in Seattle? What was your road?
I remember signing up at Shoreline Community College and, you know, being in the film program. I was asked by one of the members in the classroom, I believe it was Kara Seipler, who asked me to help her with the 48. And I was like, 48? What's that? And she was like, well, it's where you make a film and you do it in 48 hours. She didn't tell me that it was like hard. She didn't tell me it was a hard thing to do. And I'm like, so what do you want me to do? She's like, just come be your wonderful self, help out on set. You know, if you can do a little makeup or wardrobe or help with crafty, help us keep up with paperwork, whatever. Just come. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll just show up and just be there. And she's like, yep, just come at this time. You know, I didn't know like the beginning steps until I started working with TK. Like we go do all the pulling. She just said, just come and show up and help. And I was like, okay. And then I got there and I was worried at first that I was going to be tired. And man, I didn't even think about it. I was just like, yeah, this is great. I love this. This is so awesome. Do a 48, you bet. Ask me next time. I'll help. I'm excited. And then to watch it, I didn't make the first preview of the one that we had done when we previewed. I was like, I gotta leave the house and go park somewhere. My car, eek, and it's at night, and I got these kids. Yeah, next time. But then I did go to a premiere, and it was like the whole step and repeat. Everybody's taking pictures. You're sitting in the audience. We're watching everybody's work. And I was like, oh, I love this. What if I said no to? I need to do this every time. And then did like, I mean, we've done like 4 48s. I've done like 4. We did Snap. We did Blind Spot. We did, what was the one with Kara? It's a horror movie.
Mm. Do you remember the name of that one, Kurt?
Oh, I don't remember. There's so many of them.
No, I know. It's really hard for us to remember.
But I've done them, and I just loved it. I was like, this is the best experience ever.
We're lucky to have you in our community, in our family, because you are so ebullient and positive and energetic and hands-on. And I think any team that you're a part of, you're going to elevate not only the craft of the team, but also the morale, which is really crucial when everyone's under such a time crunch. And yeah, you're just a ray of sunshine when it could be doom and gloom.
Well, I mean, I think that when people first do the 48s, I look at it this way. It's like the first time you do one, you're either like, oh my God, like you were, I love this. Yes, please, let's do another. Or I am never doing that shit again. Right. So it's like, there's like this thing, right? And I think that anybody who would be lucky enough to be on a team that included you would have your positive energy. And I think they would have a good experience, even if you didn't make it on time or, you know, all of those things that can go wrong. But I mean, I think that's kind of the whole point, which I love that you know how difficult it can be and you know how many things can go wrong. And, you know, you still remain encouraged that, you know, I think it's a perfect training ground. So I love that you have done so many and that you think the same.
My favorite one I remember was when we did it at the Rainer Arts Center and you guys had like the whole, you are so creative. Okay.
Oh,
like
I know which one you're talking about.
Oh, this the horror one.
This was all Chris.
We had to lay the tarp down on the stage because of the blood. Okay. Get your hand in and get your theme. And I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm just watching it. Everybody's sticking their hand in and it's blood everywhere. And I thought,
yeah, I know. I was like to Kirk, bear with me. This is going to be probably a little messy. And
because
wanted to do something different. Yeah, I got some fake blood, got a big jar, got those fake body parts, put toe tags on them with their genres and their, what else was on there? Oh,
I think the keyword that they're supposed to use, the catchword they're supposed to use.
Yeah. And then they had to stick their hands in. We went through more paper towels.
Yes,
on that one did. With everybody. People are either like, no, I don't want to do it. Or like, yes, let me stick my hands in all that blood. It was too much fun. Yeah, I remember that was the first time I met you. I had not met you before.
Because of TK and everything.
Right, we'd seen each other.
Talked, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
He's cool people.
TK is one of those people that I've had the great pleasure to watch develop as a filmmaker. Through the 40 years, he's been doing it for a while. And I remember his early films, not all that great, but, over the years, he's become a great DP, a great colorist, and he's going to go places. He's going to have a serious career in this industry.
It was so funny. The first time I met TK was in, I think it was the summer doing... summer like 260 class at Shoreline where you do it all. You do light, you do camera, you do sound, you do the last thing is that you all together in the classroom create a project. And he was already working on the previous year's project. And he came in and he was just like very quiet. He didn't want to talk much about what he did. He didn't want to share much about his talent. But Chris kept saying, come on up, TK, come on up and talk about it. And he's like, okay, so working on this film, Grandma's House, we're going to shoot it. And I'm doing camera. I was like, who
so
is
humble.
This guy with all this energy? And I knew then it was like the ones that don't talk about how good they are or what they're doing, those are the ones you watch.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone else is raving about him. And he's just so humble. He's just like, it's what I do. Yeah. And I was just like, I want to work with him. He knows what he's doing because he's so humble about it. He doesn't want to talk about it. He just wants to do it.
Exactly. He's a doer.
He's a doer. He's amazing. Yeah.
And as the years have gone by, so brought it up at the beginning, Rising Reels, please tell us more about this because we, Chris and I and you and your daughter had a meeting a couple of months ago. We went and got breakfast and we want to promote the crap out of this because it's fantastic.
Okay. So Rising Reels came out of a place of wanting to do something for the community, wanting to do something for kids of color who have never had the opportunity to participate in or be a part of due to financial struggle. And growing up in a home where, it wasn't like we were super poor, but my mom and dad always picked and choose where the dollar went. Mm-hmm. And if it was an extracurricular activity or a sport or something, and the cost was too high, the answer was no. Now, if it was an opportunity to go somewhere for free and participate, okay, but be home by this time,
Mm-hmm.
Because you still got your chores, you still got this, you got that. So it's not that parents don't understand the excitement behind a child's interest in art. They just don't put the value on it.
They don't see the practicality of it.
Right. We watch TV all the time. We watch commercials. We watch training videos, but it doesn't really connect that it comes from the beginning, come from learning. You have to learn how to do that in order to make it. And those people are getting paid.
Yeah.
So kids of color usually don't do it unless their parents put them in football or basketball, but who looks at the arts that way? Who looks at like, oh, so you stand there and just hold a light pole You put clothes on people. I bought you dollies. You can go do that with your dolls. Go put clothes on dollies. You don't need to do that. You're right. So that idea came from wanting to take kids of color who have that drive, who have that desire in them, that want to learn about how to make a film, and give them that opportunity to learn without having to worry about cost. So at the time, a former friend of mine, we came up with the idea and we started to build it and work it together and put together a board. And we started the company and we brought in people who want to be part of the program and participate. And we started to set ideas like a curriculum. We did our first workshop last year in November. We did our first workshop where we had about 10 kids come and two of them were twins. And we wanted to serve the age range of 8 to 18 because it's those older kids that get left behind and the younger ones. Everybody just wants to work with young kids, but it's the ones in the middle, the teenagers, that get left behind because nobody wants to work with the teens. Teens are trouble, whatever. It's like, no, but teens are creative and they have idea and they have vision and they can do a lot. And sometimes they don't want to work with teens, just like Hollywood doesn't want to work with older actors because we're aging out. You can only get so many dollars off of this person before they're useless. They're of no use to you anymore. Like singers, like I watched American Idol. I kept wondering, why do they always choose the person who's in their 19, 20 years of age? Because for 40 years, they can make a profit off of that person.
Yeah.
So what about like the older lady? I think her name is Susan or Susie, who sang older, but beautiful voice from Ireland. So you're not going to get a lot of years out of her. And she's smart. She's been around. But she brings something to the creative world. She brings hope and inspiration with her voice.
Right.
Kids can do that with their idea. It's an opportunity to give them the voice, use their voice to creatively express themselves and be heard. So the program is designed to teach them from pre-production to production to post and after, like IOTSI, union, water permits, really give them a full scope of how to do a film, not just make one, but also how to operate and run it if you want to do it right. So that it keeps them too from being a hindrance to the community, because sometimes older kids, when they have nothing to do, or even younger kids, they get into vandalism.
Sure.
They get into destroying the property in their community. They get into getting into trouble. The police officers are hanging around because the kids are hanging out in a group. They got nothing to do with their time. This gives them that chance to be creative.
Yeah, and you learn a lot of social skills just by interacting in such a collaborative art form.
And they have to work in a team. So they have to learn to work together. So they're learning teamwork too. They're learning how to depend on their fellow man. How do I depend on this person? And when you're finished, everyone takes participant in the cake because everybody was a part of making this.
Right.
Yeah. So I was a political theory major in college. And one of the concepts that.
Look where he is now. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
With a ponytail.
It is a little orange, that ponytail.
Orange and purple. Purple. But one of the core concepts that came through basically all of the theory courses I took was the idea that, a community is built of individuals, and you know who you are as an individual in relationship to your community. So that there's that constant balance. And I think filmmaking is such a great example of that, in that if you're the gaffer, granted you're one of the, the faceless in it, but your individual work is all over that film.
Absolutely.
You get to watch that and say, I made that shadow back there. I'm really proud of the halo effect I got.
I create that sunbeam coming through the window.
Exactly. And I think people, especially teenagers, where they're struggling with this idea of who am I and how do I fit into a community, that filmmaking is a great vehicle for that.
It is.
Right. And not everybody has to be a star, right? Like not everybody has to be in front of the camera. And to learn that if you don't have every single one of these elements in your community, you don't have a film. So everybody is just as important as the actors and the people in front of the camera, for sure.
The concept too
is really great.
If you're not good enough at what you're focused on doing, like for me, my role when I'm working on set is I'm either assistant director or I'm doing COVID compliance, making sure everybody's staying safe. Or I am doing production assisting wherever I'm needed. Hey, can you grab that sandbag? Hey, can you bring those C-stands over here? Hey, do you mind standing here and holding the bounce? Nope, no problem. Or like I said, assistant director, keeping everybody on schedule, saving production money so that we can make sure we get the shots the director wants, but we save, you know, the company as well. Mm-hmm. When I found my niche, when I found out, my God, I'm really good at this and I like it. Some people are just like, I hate doing that. All assistant directors are yelling at you all the time. They're screaming. I'm like, not me. Because I understand every person's role on that set. I value them. I can't do my job without them. So I appreciate them. So why would I scream at them or yell at them? All I have to say is, okay, guys, 10 minutes. We got to really get going. We need to keep pushing. Everybody on board. We're all in agreement. Everybody's like, yeah, okay, let's do this. Let's go. We're doing it. We're like, you know, it's all about communicating. But if you're not in your niche, you know, if you're really, truly more of a director than you are an assistant director, you're not going to communicate well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
And film gives you that chance to find your place in that community where you get in and you fit in. And if you don't fit in, someone will say, you know, well, maybe you're more of a wardrobe person or more of a makeup person. I see that you are hanging out a lot at the camera station. Maybe you'd like to be a DP.
Right.
Talk to the director. Yeah. And film gives you that opportunity to go talk to those people in those positions. Get to know more about what they do. Ask questions. Yeah, everybody can't be an actor. I mean, you can, but are you good at it?
You might suck. No, I'm kidding.
Are you good at it? And I tell people very honestly.
Tell us a little bit about your program within Rising Reel, other than just what it covers, but like what the length of it is, a little bit more about when it happens, those kind of things.
Okay, so our workshops are usually about 4 hours long, and we try to do at least two, one in the winter and one in the spring. So we do have one coming up in May after Mother's Day, that weekend after Mother's Day, that first Saturday for 4 hours, and we're going to do that at the Renton Civic Theater. Then we're doing our summer camp for 1 month in August for where we take them through the phases of making a film. And at the end, it's making a film and entering it in a film festival.
Nice.
So wow. We
work on shaping it and making it look right and look good. And they're going to go through the phases. They're going to go through the steps of, you know, casting and creating and editing and, you know, shooting and filming and learning what does this do? What does that do? You know, and then, hey, okay, now it's time to shoot.
Nice.
Well, just so you know, since we last talked, we secured funding for 10 pre-registered teams. So
good job, you guys.
Yeah, we're pretty happy.
Yeah. So if you want a Rising Reels team, we have a registration for you.
So I think we talked about maybe you would possibly be ready. Maybe it would be something for the fall. Or even next year.
Definitely
if you didn't feel like they're ready this year, but the fall would be fun. They've done this, they've entered into festivals, and now you're going to, you know, maybe you have a team that does the 48 in the fall, which would be fantastic.
And they have a taste of what it is, what to expect.
Right. So yeah, we definitely have one for you set aside for Rising Reels. So don't even have to apply. Well, maybe you'll have to apply
I'm going to show them.
Fix the election.
Exactly. I'm going to show them the steps so I can get them addicted and hooked. And then they'll be doing it again and again and again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah, definitely. That would be a great incentive. Like we could take them, you know, to the spring 48 and then show them what it is. And so once they've seen it, Now they know what to do, and then they can decide, hey, I want to be a part of that. You'll get the ones who really are interested in doing it. Because it's great to work with ones who, you know, we in the film world, we can flake out because we figure, yeah, this is not really what I'm into. Or you get them where they're like me, gung ho, all the way.
Yeah.
When's the next film?
Yeah, you could make it a field trip to come to the 48 screenings and, you know, or something. We could figure that all out. But bring your group.
It's crazy the technology in this day and age. Because when we were kids making films, that was it was either crappy VHS things or you had to fork out a ton of money for, you know, 8mm, Super 8, or, you know, if you really had the cash, 16. Mm-hmm. So my wife Kasha and I, we love Mythbusters.
Oh,
absolutely,
yeah.
Love Mythbusters. And she's a mathematician and economist and complete science geek. And I can't remember which episode it was, but Adam was talking about his experience working on big budget features. And that's how he got into science, was through working out all of these problems that come up on the set. And I remember Kasha said, I wish my guidance counselor in high school had told me that my passion for mathematics and science could lead to a career in filmmaking.
Yeah. But they don't know. That's why they don't say anything. They don't know that. They Hollywood is all fake. We make it up. No, we do research. We bring in the researchers. We tell a real story. How do we tell a story as true as possible? We get the people who know how to do the work to teach the crew or teach the director, teach the producers what it should look like.
And something, especially in, you know, special effects, practical special effects, there are people that need to know various schools of math and physics and chemistry, even in the, you know, makeup department and visual effects makeup. There's so much chemistry involved. And I love that you're going to be giving kids the opportunity to kind of see that what they're learning in school can have a practical creative outlet.
It will all start to connect.
Yeah. You could blow shit up on movies for a living. If you understand chemistry and physics.
Lovable Fender.
You can blow shit up even if you don't understand chemistry and physics. No,
but you'll do it more safely if you do.
I know, right.
Yeah, of course. Well, of course. I mean, my favorite TV shows are Bones and House and Tuck. And when I found out that the nurse on Nip Tuck is a real nurse.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they hired her to be in the TV show to help them make sure, like, whenever they're using the right language, they're doing the right, like, plastic surgery,
right?
Cuts, you know, using the right tools and stuff. So they really, like, there's a place for
writing.
Yes,
the shows you mentioned, I mean, House and Bones, they're. You know, Kasha and I love it. We binge watch those frequently.
Totally.
We'll watch anything that has Hugh Laurie in it, just because Hugh Laurie. And the amount of techno babble in a lot of the shows, there are doctors and anthropologists and physicists and astronomers and cosmologists who are working in writing.
Mm-hmm.
To help make sure that, you know, the techno babble isn't just babble, that there's some basis in it. And I know Kasha will freak out sometimes when she sees math on a chalkboard in a TV or movie and just go, no, that's gibberish.
That makes no sense. I don't know why they're using that.
That's complete gibberish.
They just put a lot up on the board. I mean, and that's also to, like, takes me back to where I said, people telling our story.
Mm-hmm.
These kids have a story to tell. who better to tell their story than themselves and to tell it correctly?
Yep.
Now, when it started, when Rising Rules really started, was when the George Floyd things took place and Antifa and Black Lives Matter, and kids were watching their cousins and their uncles, you know, family members getting shot at by police officers, or they're in that war zone because that's where they live. All that crazy happening up on Broadway and Capitol Hill area. Those kids live up there. And it's one thing for me to come in, and I haven't been there and I'm not in that environment. Yes, I am a person of color, but to tell a whole gruesome story, but it's better when you live there and you have that gift to tell the story, and you can tell the matters, and you can tell the facts correctly, and you can tell the beginning and the middle and the end and the ongoing. And who to tell the story than those kids? And those kids have a story to tell, and it should be heard.
Yeah.
They need an outlet. They need a way to express whatever hurt, whatever fear, whatever feeling of disconnect and mistrust. It's crazy. I just got through watching an episode on Lucifer where they're talking about the injustice. And I mean, they always find a way, like, take those nice little shows and stick in a moment of like scary truth where two officers of color are on the force, and a case has happened where the one white detective is writing it off as gangbanging and trying to cover his tracks and use the innocent woman who was shot in the park and ran away as the criminal, as the scapegoat, instead of doing work to seek out, you know, who really did this crime. And in my mind, I'm thinking, someone really sat down and wrote this part in this film. Someone sat down and wrote this part in this TV series, and they're trying to send a message to the public.
Right.
And if you are a person of color, it hits you.
Sure.
I mean, I felt it in my chest, and I was like, wow, this is deep, because this is every day. Somebody really wrote this story right, and they're telling it right. Mm-hmm. Imagine our kids being able to do this, get their film out there. And it brings a sense of like accomplishment when they're heard, because there's one little guy that also too was having trouble in school. That was his story. It sticks in my mind. He was having trouble in school. He really wasn't standing out. He really wasn't excelling. He really wasn't trying. Young man over in Rainier Beach area. And he had written a prompt. He had written a poem. And his dad is in charge of the FAST program, Fathers and Sons Together. He wrote a poem, and Derek Johnson found out about it and was like, well, let's record the poem and put motion to it. Let's put some story behind it. So he, you know, he put the poem on film. The young kid recited his poem and took him through actions and moments and stuff, different shots and everything in a little short film. And they showed it in school, and they showed it in festivals, and it got such recognition that it changed the way the boy sees himself. He went from not really participating in class to excelling. His confidence built up. He carries himself differently. He is an active member in his dad's program at FAST. He works with the young kids there as a leader. Wow. And that's just from being able to tell a story and have it be seen and feel like he's heard, and people give him feedback because they're like, hey, you're the kid who wrote that poem. And it's all about being a young Black male in that community and how he feels like he gets labeled.
That's a great story, Trina. I like that.
That's amazing.
And we can do that with so many kids in Rising Reels.
Yeah.
Empowerment.
Well, it's a little tangential, but... you know, in this day and age, you know, we have directors like Jordan Peele and Ryan Coogler and Boots Riley. And I'm a huge Marvel Cinematic Universe geek, and I had to go see Black Panther on opening night. And it was packed, just packed, packed, packed. And normally I'm annoyed by kids in theaters. but there were, on both sides of me, there were you know, two Black families with a bunch of kids, and the sheer joy on their face, the excitement at seeing a Black superhero.
Yeah.
I just kept looking over and just, I was beaming with excitement for them because they were so excited at seeing, you know, Black
themselves
Panther
on screen. Yeah. When exactly you see yourself on screen, not you per se, but a person representing you in a positive way, in a superhero way, in a save the day way, it's so refreshing.
Well, and especially with that movie, Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger, he was one of my favorite, and I don't want to call him a villain because he's not a villain in the movie. He's an antagonist.
Yeah, he is.
And he's just an onion of complexity in that film. You sympathize with his goal as, you know, kind of off the rails as his plan would go. You sympathize with it. And that's the mark of, you know, great writing. And his performance was so good as Killmonger. I mean, I rate Killmonger right up there with Vader.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember my writing class, I think I shared this with you before, you learn that when you start to write out your characters and you've got your hero and your villain, you've got to step into the shoes of the villain and write it from a point of view of like, you believe in your cause and what you're doing. And you see yourself as the hero. You're yeah. not a villain. You're serving. You're just like, okay, these are my limitations. This is my boundary line, but I am the good guy because what he said, his line was like, you know, why you have all this technology and you're hiding, mm-hmm. not sharing it with the rest of us out there in the world, your people who are dying every day. You need to yeah. share this technology with them. So he's the hero. His points were valid. And yeah. the Black Panther even questions his father. Why didn't yeah. he bring play? Why are we hiding? Why aren't we sharing our technology? Why aren't we helping our people?
Yeah, and that's, I think you can look at a movie like Rogue One differently. If you look at, so Jyn Erso, I would say she's the protagonist in that she moves the plot along. But the hero of that film is the rebellion itself. It's a completely different take on the movie. And I think it makes, if you can wrap your head around that, when you look at who's in the rebellion, it's a lot of people of color that are making lots and lots and lots of sacrifices for the white people up in the ships where it's relatively safe.
Yeah. Well, what is that? You know, the Air Force comes in last, but the Army and the Navy are the first. The Army and the Navy are the first to be on the ground, and they're the animals. They're the pawns that get pushed, but the Air Force comes in and, you know, drops their bombs and flies back to their ships. It's like, wow.
Well, it's like in the South Park movie when that came out. They said,
South Park.
And they nailed it. They called it Operation Get Behind the Darkies.
It's true. It's true. Yep.
I must admit I don't watch South Park, but I'm sorry.
You gotta watch the movie. The movie is great. It's the best musical ever made.
I've seen bits and pieces, but I have not seen much.
Oh, I mean, some of the commentary in it is, they were ahead of their time. I
think
the team has kind of come out of the engine, but that movie was way ahead of its time.
Oh yeah. And yet we laugh because there's an element of truth in the storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if there's truth, it's relatable and people, you know, we could poke at it because it's animation and laugh and tongue in cheek, but that's what's really happening.
Right.
Yeah.
We, the animation, take in the truth, really look at it for what they're really saying. You know, and then what is it they say that art imitates life? But sometimes I think life is imitating art.
Right.
Oh, in this day and age, things are just, you can't tell what's an Onion article or not. We live in strange times.
We definitely do.
That's we do. Sure.
But as long as we just keep making art, you know,
yeah.
How and can we go wrong?
You need to laugh too. So I have, it seems the majority of my friends are people of various Slavic varieties. Mm-hmm. So Polish, Croatian, Bosnian, Serbian, Bulgarian, Romanian, Polish, Czech, and they're all from, you know, war-torn countries or countries that were oppressed by the Kremlin. Some of them are now again being oppressed by the Kremlin.
Right.
And their sense of humor is so dark and so inappropriate, but it's coming from a place where, you know, especially my Bosnian friend, they could have just stepped off the road 5 years after the war and stepped on a landmine.
Right.
And a very specific, dark sense of humor comes out of that. And if you can't laugh at something, why bother living?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
In mind over there.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. When I was on tour with the band Culture Shock, we were driving to Sarajevo, and a bunch of the guys in the van, we all had to go take a piss. So we stopped on the side of the road, and the singer Gino, there's just four guys on the side of the road. We're all about to, you know, take a leak. And then Gino just says, okay, everyone back up. Take the exact steps you took back. We're like, dude, why? There was a sign that there were potentially landmines.
Oh, Lord.
And we're like, oh, wow. And that's
don't pee on one.
There's your multiple castrations all at once.
Absolutely. Especially those bouncing Bettys. They just jump right up. Everybody's cut out.
But
sorry, I got the visual. I can't get it out.
But it's just, you know, the importance of, you know, coming from a class of, you know, oppression, or be it socioeconomic or literal war. I think what you're doing with young, you know, children and young adult filmmakers to give them that voice, like you described, is so crucial. And I'm so grateful that you're doing it.
Thank you.
And we want to support you in any way that we can, as, you know, Chris and I both realize we're privileged cis hetero white married people from the suburbs. So
we're not married to each other.
No.
We're married people, you know, to other people.
Other people.
Spell that rumor once again.
What are these days people get
to
it?
Each other?
Oh, you guys look such a cute couple.
But I mean, the only thing that we can do is just be that training ground and provide that opportunity. That is what we can offer, right? So that is very important to us.
You're helping me to get the word out, and that's what I need, is to be, I mean, we are, our first year was like the laying the foundation and getting everything in play, and, you know, then we had our first, like, we announced ourselves at the Seattle Film Summit for the first time, and, you know, we had our table there, and then we did our first workshop, and we had low numbers, but we had who needed to be there, they were there. Those right. kids were amazing. And it was just the spark and the energy and the excitement of, like, we are doing this. And 10 of my best friends who came in, who shared their art and their craft with those kids. And those kids walked away excited. And right. they're interested. Good. And they want to participate. And I'm like, okay, well, we got to get the word out. And then we, too, just came into some funding through...
Awesome.
Good.
Arts community, the grant. So we are just like, because when I left the meeting, I was praying. I was like, okay, God, I want to do the summer camp. Just lead me to a really good job so I can pay for it. I'm just thinking, it's got to happen. These mm-hmm. kids are inspiring me. And then we got that word like in November that this grant was out, $25,000. It was out. It's available. If you're, you know, you definitely meet the criteria, we want to support it. And I was like, okay, what do we do? Just fill out the document and say you want it. And I was like, this is too
awesome.
And we sure did. And, you know, we're on our path, and it makes our summer It makes this year laying down that foundation we laid, it makes it possible to attain those goals and to make things happen so we can reach those kids. And then just again, getting the word out that we're here. This is what we want to do for the kids. This is what we want to do for the community. This is like that empowerment that we want to offer. And I don't intend for us to go anywhere because, like I said, it's a mentorship too. We want them to come back and teach the younger kids. If they've done that 1 year, come back, work with the next generation.
That's a fantastic idea. Yeah.
Like the Boys and Girls Club, keep coming back.
Right. Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, we're coming up on an hour here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun.
It has
to be. If people want to get more information about Rising Reels, where can they find it?
They can visit our website at rising-reels.org. And that's our website. Let me just confirm it. Yeah, Rising, R-I-S-I-N-G-Reels, R-E-E-L-S.org. And visit our website. And they can also find us on Facebook. We do have a Facebook page.
I'll make sure to put all the links in the show notes.
Okay. And if you were to Google us too, Google Maps, we have pictures and stuff up there too.
And can people give money to you on the website?
We're setting that up.
Okay.
Get that set up, girl.
I know. We started working on it. We actually have somebody connecting it. So
good.
At this moment, not yet, but okay. Definitely emailed me and said, hey, I'd like to make a donation. You know, if you sent the email out, I would respond and we would have a way, but just at this second, not yet.
Okay. Because I want people to give you money.
I know. I'll take money. I'll take your kid too. Ages of 8 and 18, I'll take your kid. They can be mixed of race. We had a lovely mixture of kids. We had Asian kids and we had Native American. We had African American. We had like Korean and Taiwanese. So these kids are hungry. They want to learn. They want to learn. And I was like, yes, this is what we're for. This is why we're here.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do everything we can to help you in your mission.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for taking an hour out of your time to chat with us. And, you know, we got your back.
I appreciate it.
Whatever you need.
Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, I'm getting over a cold. So it was nice to have a, you know, good, healthy dose of the sunshine that is Trina Griffin. I get vitamin D just by hearing you talk.
That's her. That's Arena Calder. A healthy dose of sunshine. That is Trina Griffin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So it really doesn't matter what you look like, say or do. I know that I had a cooler weekend than you.
48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories is a production of Media Without Borders and the Seattle 48 Hour Film Project.